It's 90 days until the referendum. I can probably tell you, if you push me, how many hours and minutes it is to polling closes. 14 weeks, that is, till we've been asked, in my case, to make one of the most significant political choices I've ever had to make. And I've been around politics for a long time, and still this is probably the most important decision in terms of my nation's interests that I have to make. And it really is beginning to hit home amongst the Scottish people, the magnitude of this decision, really beginning to grasp the importance of it. You know, obviously I've been campaigning throughout the length and breadth of Scotland, you know, out a lot talking to people, and people are very willing to have the conversation with you. You know, there is real engagement about this issue throughout Scotland, and people get its significance, and they get that they're not just making it for themselves, that this is a different type of election. You know, they're making it for the children, their grandchildren, and there's no going back on it. It cannot be undone. This is the permanent solution, as some would see it. And they get the fact it's not like just changing a government. You know, it is irreversible. And I suppose for someone like me, you know, political nationalism has been a feature of Scottish politics for some time, and to varying degrees, probably for about 80 years. And here we are at this key moment in Scotland's story. And I think it's an opportunity once and for all to make a decision about which kind of future we want for the people of Scotland. You know, given the length of time we've been talking about this issue, the option of separation and the depth of the discussion that we're having and the dominance of this as a political issue, it's very clear, and I think it's very settled in Scottish people's minds, that we just can't keep talking about the Constitution forever. And it can't always be seen as a solution to our problems. We actually need to settle it. We need to make our decision and move on. And that's why I think there is a sense in Scotland that this vote is so decisive about which future we want to take, which future we want to endorse. So for us, on the no side of the campaign, and you'll see I'm wearing my no thanks badge, it's an opportunity to actually address this independence question once and for all. Is this the way we want to go, or isn't it? Because we really do need to settle the question so we can get back to focusing on the issues that really matter to the vast majority of people in Scotland. Some of that is beginning to emerge a bit just now, but we need to talk about some of the fundamental issues of why people getting, you know, listen to politicians at all, and want politicians to make decisions about the quality of their lives, the issues that they're facing in their lives, be that from improving schools and hospitals to building a better, a fairer economy, and actually beginning to answer some of those big fundamental questions. But what's interesting is that while nationalist politics has been a feature in Scotland, certainly for a number of generations, nationalism itself hasn't. Because in Scotland there is patently, and obviously you will understand this, a deep commitment to our national identity. And you see that in the polls, as you know, Scottish identity is becoming more and more what your preference. If anybody ever asked me what nationality I was, I would have and would always have said Scottish, you know. And I think there's a sense of people being asked to make a choice between being Scottish and British, but actually, you know, there does seem to be a lot of a degree of settled view around you can be both, and having to choose is actually causing a degree of concern for people. But that increasing, as we see in the polls, that increasing identity with being Scottish and a commitment to the Scottish Parliament and a sense that the Scottish Parliament speaks for Scottish people isn't necessarily matched by an upswing in nationalism, which is quite an interesting pattern, as you see that having been developed in Scotland over the past generation, you know, that the devolution generation, which I'll talk about shortly. That, you know, we do see that identity of Scotland is important and that political expression of that identity is important, but people have found other ways to do that and don't see that as necessarily being an upswing in nationalism. And I think you see that in Wales. I'll be very careful here talking about Wales because obviously I'm in the room where people know a lot more about it. But my understanding is that you've neither had that, you know, majority support for separation either. You know, and even now, 2 years into the campaign, and you will know that the SNP have been successful in Scottish elections and are now a majority government. But even now, support for separation still sits at around a third of the population, as the polls will tell you. And among those people who have made up their mind, in the referendum. And even amongst the don't knows, it still seems to be that it's at that third. But, and actually, that's always been the same. That's been a constant in Scottish politics my lifetime. It's always been about that third of the Scottish population who have said, whatever, you know, whatever the, you know, the cost of the swings of it, they would still support separation. Still, undoubtedly, the majority of people in Scotland support devolution in the United Kingdom. But we've got 90 days to go, and we still have a big argument to have, so I wouldn't be complacent about that. But I do think the argument for staying as part of the United Kingdom is beginning to have quite considerable traction in Scotland now that we're getting to put those arguments to people. Because our nations have had significant influence on the UK, and I think people are beginning to understand that. You know, the nationalists often try to say that those of us on this side of the argument are talking Scotland down. But the argument now is coming out that's quite the reverse. And I would say that our history demonstrates that. Scotland has always punched above our weight in the world, but also particularly in the United Kingdom. And we've built the UK. We are part of the UK. It's not something apart from us. And we've done it together here with our friends in Wales, but also with friends and colleagues in England and Northern Ireland. And this is the country we've built together. And that's why I don't think people want to turn their back on it. And I think people believe the story of our partnership isn't over yet, and we've still got a lot more to do and a lot more we can do together. But the argument against that, what the nationalists will argue, is they want to give the impression that being part of the UK, Scotland's voice is diminished, and that somehow we're weaker for working in partnership and we can't solve our problems if we continue that partnership. But again, I think our history and our future points to a different story. Because it's the history of Scotland's voice and role, I think, is being enhanced, not eroded. Because we built very significant institutions together, institutions that still matter and have real meaning for people in Scotland. The BBC, the Bank of England, and we've got a particular debate about that. And of course, I would say the Labour Party, founded by Scots. And also, we've got built our families together and our stories together. At the time of Union in 1707, around 2% of people in Scotland had relatives in other parts of the United Kingdom. That now stands at 50%. Over 800,000 people born in Scotland now live in other parts of the UK. Around 25,000 people here in Wales were born in Scotland, 3,000 of them here in Cardiff. And I think that speaks to that kind of integration of peoples that we're having. You will have seen that J.K. Rowling recently came out in support of staying together. And part of the argument she used, and it was a very good article she wrote, is about that integration of people, that you would need microsurgery, actually, to separate us off if you actually look how integrated our experiences and our stories have become. And I think for a lot of Scots, that integration, that influence, those institutions isn't something that's caused us difficulty. It's actually something that gives us a degree of pride, whether that's the contribution we've made to the arts, culture, our economy, or to politics. And I think people are beginning to have a sense that that's what's at stake in a referendum. But of course, the alternative argument is to say that the union is effectively redundant and it offers no way forward for Scotland. And it challenges our notion and our vision of the union, which is as a family of nations, and it's never presented like that. And there's a tenor of the debate in Scotland that's becoming very divisive, and I think that's because we're being presented with an argument that is us versus them, and them is always London. Sometimes England, but it usually is London. And that, I think, tells you a lot of the strand of thinking behind the SNP and the Yeses argument. Because it's being presented quite clearly in Scotland that the thing that Scots want to separate away from and the thing that we stand to lose are the Tories. Now, there's an argument why you might want to be persuaded about that, why you might want to separate yourself off from the Tories, but I'll leave that to one side and maybe come back to that later. But they're presenting to the Scottish people as if the only people we're really saying goodbye to are people like David Cameron and George Osborne. But in fact, that's not the reality, because the brutal facts are we'd be leaving behind the people of Wales, the people of the north of England and the northwest of England, people with whom a lot of Scots have, with whom we've got a lot in common. and people with whom we've worked with in political partnership for years and developed a lot of work together and a lot of agendas together. Now, the Nationalists would say that their plan is that we can still be the best of friends with our neighbours across the UK. But my argument is that we don't want to just be friends. We want to be more than friends, and we want our political partnership to continue, because it's worked for us and it's worked to the benefits of Scots. And together, I think we can still achieve more together than we can as separate countries. And that's because we have more in common than actually divides us, that sets us apart. And I do think the vast majority of Scots get that. And that's what the polling is telling us, that people do get that sense of what we've achieved together and that that partnership works for us. And for those of us who believe in the union, and it'd be interesting to see, because I think this has got some appeal across the United Kingdom, the threat of separation, the threat of that breakup of Britain has been a bit of a wake-up call, because we know now more than ever what's at risk in the referendum and the value of what we have together, and what the magnitude of the decision and the consequences of that are. Recent polling that's been conducted, I think just in the past few weeks by our campaign, has found that most people support pooling and sharing our resources across the United Kingdom. The vast majority of Scots want pensions and benefits to be the same across the United Kingdom. They want our resources, including our oil wealth, to be shared across the United Kingdom, because we all get a benefit out of that. And in some ways, I think that's entirely within the sort of political developments within Scotland. Because while we, as I say, jealously, fiercely, we protect our own distinctive identity, you know, in all sorts of ways, but also our own distinctive political identity, and we have developed our own agenda, we also get the fact that we want to work across the UK when we have shared interests and shared priorities. And that's why I think the polling does show most people support devolution and strengthening the Scottish Parliament, but not separation. As I understand it, here in Wales, the popularity of devolution has steadily increased over the past 15 years. People understand that devolution has benefited Scotland and improved the governance of the UK. It has increased accountability. It has enhanced pluralism in terms of some of the political debates we're having within the UK. It's modernised government, and it can continue to do so. It can be improved. Some of you may know that earlier this year, the Scottish Labour Party published the conclusions of our devolution commission. I spent 2 years as a member of the commission. I used to laugh, it felt like 10, but it was actually only two. And I think that the final proposals that we came up with, which Ed Miliband has committed to implementing in full, will make a significant difference to the Scottish Parliament. The new powers built on what is already in the Scotland Act, which will be implemented in 2016, which was a resultant on the Calman Commission. Our proposals have three key elements. Firstly, we accepted the need both to increase the accountability of the Parliament and the desire to make it able for it to be able to make more progressive taxation choices if that was the decision of the Scottish Government. That's why we will increase the percentage of income tax that the Scottish Government sets from around 13%, then to a third in 2016, and then to 40% with these new proposals. We also accepted the argument that the Scottish Parliament should have control of housing benefit, which brings together, matches that up with housing policy, which is devolved, and then would allow some degree of coherence around that policy if you put the housing benefit with housing policy. And finally, we set out to ensure that the powers we are proposing provide more opportunities for influencing economic opportunities. And that's why we want to devolve the work programme to Scottish local authorities. Now, there are some other aspects of the Commission's work about devolving the enforcement of health and safety, employment tribunals, and more powers to Scotland's island communities, which we have a particular issue with. But taken all in all, this is actually a fairly robust package which will strengthen our devolution settlement, and again, has had a very positive response from the Scottish people. But for us, it's not just about devolution passing from Westminster to Edinburgh or indeed to Cardiff. It has to be matched with a commitment to put power into people's hands and to further that process of devolution and to reshape the UK and the relationship between our nations. Because one of the big arguments is that devolution strengthens the Scottish Parliament, but it doesn't diminish our influence and our power within the UK either. And we have to ensure that our continued role within the UK is strong and influential. Now, when Ed Miliband is laying out his support for the devolution of these powers, we also know we have to match that with bold and radical measures to change our economy. And we also need to think more broadly about the way we govern ourselves and how we modernise government and understand people's deep malaise with the political system as it stands. And the devolved administrations, as I say, have given a stronger voice to our nations, but it has also meant that Scotland and Wales have had those bigger voices in the UK, and we want to continue for that to keep going so we can find the distinctive solutions to our nation's challenges, but also ensure we have a platform where there is shared action and common goals. One thing is clear from my experience in Scotland in the recent months. When the referendum is over, regardless of the outcome, there is a real sense people want politicians to put our differences aside and move on. As I say, they don't want any further constitutional wrangling, and I think they want a sense of focus on their needs rather than just conversations between politicians. But for this to happen, we will make good on our promise of further powers to the Scottish Parliament, and also have to make that happen, we have to deliver the further powers to the Scottish Parliament. But we also, I think, have quite a moment where we have people in power for the first time in the UK who have a sense of devolution and who have lived and breathed and have a genuine commitment to devolution. And if I'm Secretary of State next year, in a year from now, as I certainly hope to be, I think, you know, that gives a real opportunity to make this happen. As I said, Ed has committed to further devolution and made his intention to legislate for further devolution in our first Queen's speech absolutely clear. But more importantly, a year from now, this devolution generation will effectively be in charge as they come forward for the new leadership that that will take charge. The vast majority of Labour's politicians now have only actually served at that level since devolution has been in place. And we also have now people with experience in devolved parliaments and serving in ministerial office within the devolved administrations. And I think, I'm not sure of the situation in Wales, but in Scotland, we are now getting people who have served in the Scottish Parliament now serving the UK Parliament and vice versa. So this is a generation of people who are savvier about devolution and how it operates within the UK than has ever come before. So it gives us a foundation on which to work. And one of the issues we will turn to first is how we work together with the devolved administrations, including the Scottish Government. And there are a number of issues I think we need to turn our minds to. First, and I don't think we've given a focus about this, about how what the relationships between the different governments across the United Kingdom are, and we need to give that some real attention. Because there are few opportunities for a common platform for our devolved institutions and the UK government to work together. The joint ministerial system, for example, which underpins the formal relationships between the UK government and the devolved administrations, is hidden effectively behind closed doors. But these bodies deal with issues as important as EU negotiations, disputes over domestic cross-border issues and our nation's finances. So they are very important discussions that take place. So it's important that we actually try to look again at how we can develop those discussions and those arrangements. The powers of the devolved administrations are enhanced, and so it's right that we look, as we enhance those powers, it's right that we look to how the institutions relate to each other and develop the change that's appropriate at that level. Devolution was intended to open up politics, to make it more transparent, to make it more accountable. So we need to actually shine a light of accountability and transparency onto those intergovernmental relationships. Secondly, the relationships between the government departments, Scottish Government, Welsh Assembly and Northern Ireland Assembly, are a patchwork of agreements and memorandums that are not always fit for purpose and certainly need to catch up with the changes that we are proposing. and particularly the machinery of government itself needs to change, and we need to effectively make sure that devolution is hardwired into Whitehall. And finally, while the parliaments and assemblies have developed, the UK Parliament has not adapted as much as it needs to the reality of devolution. And relations between the institutions and the way they work together needs to be brought up to date. Calman and Silk Commissions looked at this and have some proposals about how we might do this, but we've not really implemented them and we've not really developed them. So that's an important way we can strengthen that, that relationship. And it's an important way that we can strengthen the role of our nations and, I would argue, the entire governance of the UK. And that's why the next Labour government, if elected next May, will institute a review of these issues, a review that will examine how our governments work together and propose new ways about how they can be made effective. The purpose of the review will be to ensure that, as far as possible, all our governments can work together effectively in the best interests of their own people and people across the UK where our interests are the same. And I think answers an appetite amongst people for that need for constructive cooperation. So we'll look again at part four of the Calman Commission and where we can work with the House of Common Authorities to make that a reality. And I think that does demonstrate that we're serious about enhancing the powers of our parliaments and ensuring that they work together. So, you know, as I say, within 90 days, Scotland will make a big decision. And as the, you know, that date closes in on us, I think there is a clear recognition that we're at a crossroads in Scotland, perhaps a crossroads across the whole of the United Kingdom. And I'm not complete, as I say, the polls still indicate that we still want to stay, but I'm not remotely complacent about it, because there is a real desire for change amongst people, and we need to understand that desire, why they want that change. Significant economic insecurity, as you see the impact of globalisation, particularly in the communities we represent, where there is profound economic dislocation and people have paid a heavy price for that and don't feel governments properly have responded to that. There's an alienation from traditional politics where people don't talk, we don't think we talk enough about their interests, and a lack or no confidence in the old approaches. So you can perfectly understand why people want a new way. I don't think separation answers that. I don't think it offers people a new way. In fact, I think it's a solution of the past, and people feel that it doesn't answer and offer any solutions to these new challenges. But what we need to do is to continue to build and empower our democratic institutions, with our national parliaments there to address the specific needs of our nations. But also, we need to work together across the United Kingdom on our shared economic interests and our shared social interests. And if we develop a plan of action around that, I think we can offer people hope for the future where we speak to their national identity, but we also do it in a cooperative way where we look what we have together as peoples and what we share together as peoples and the agendas we want to pursue, and that we'll be effectively better together. Thank you.